This is Radio Sai Global Harmony Asia Stream, and you're listening to Thursday Live, live broadcasting and hosting from our studios at Prashanthi Nilayam. Welcome, dear listeners, to yet another episode of Afternoon Satsang. Yes, it is yet another episode, but it is a special one too, because exactly 1 year back, we began this journey of Afternoon Satsang. And I just happened to realize this a couple of minutes before we start, and to celebrate this occasion and, as always, to join you in this afternoon satsang, I have with me Brother Arvind. Sairam Arvind.
Sairam Prem, and wow, it is a discovery for me that you are saying that it is one year since we began the afternoon satsang. I think about 2-3 months back we celebrated the 1 year anniversary of the afternoon live.
Right.
So I remember after 2-3 months, yes, this afternoon satsang began. What a beautiful journey it has been. In the process, I think the biggest beneficiaries have been us.
Right.
We have learned so much about Swami, about his teachings and his stories, you know, which constitute the Sai Bhagavatam. I always feel, you know, whenever anybody is speaking about or writing about or anything regarding Swami, mm-hmm. or God in general, I feel, this is my personal opinion, I just feel that instead of, you know, sometimes only talking about the teachings may get dry and boring, but I feel if we speak about Swami's stories, the beauty is that it automatically, you know, draws out love and inspiration from the heart, and that love and inspiration automatically inspires a person to follow the teachings also. So I'd rather always talk about Swami because it builds up such a kind of love for Swami, which will inspire me in turn to follow his teachings. So I feel that is a stronger and more sure way of inculcating Swami's teachings rather than directly just speaking that Swami said this, Swami said this. Speak about Swami, the love for Swami will come, and that love for Swami will make you follow the teachings of Swami.
Yeah, definitely, I do agree with you, but of course, you know, the due importance for Swami's teachings also has to be given. And as you said, it is definitely, you know, we all have taken to Swami's teachings only because we've been so enamored by that personality that Swami held. But that said and done, you know, some, I was just thinking of a small story some time back.
Mm-hmm.
There's a man who's a big fan of an Audi car.
Okay.
Because he goes and test drives an Audi car and goes to this showroom to have a look at the Audi car, not to test drive. So then he sees somebody starting the Audi car.
Mm-hmm.
And have you ever seen an Audi car starting up?
No.
It starts with such a, that vroom and that, you know, that the engine startup,
okay.
itself is so beautiful. You know, if you're a car
enthusiast,
you will know that the rumble with which that car engine starts, it's so exciting.
Mm.
So he's so excited about that car starting up. So, you know, he spends all his savings on buying an Audi car. So a few weeks down the line, he calls his best friend and he says, you know, you should come and check out my Audi car. So he comes by and gets into the car and he starts it. And he says, do you enjoy that? How does that sound? So this guy's saying, oh, it's amazing. It's so great and all that. So he says, come, let's go for a drive. So this man says, no, I don't know to drive the car. I really get into it and just start it and then switch it off.
Okay.
Okay. So his friend says, are you crazy? You've spent a fortune on this car. You know, of course, it is fun starting the car, but you should check out driving the car.
Hmm.
Because to start the car is only the start. You start it because there is fun in driving it. And I feel that's how it is with Swami's life also. You know, the miracles, the excitement. It is definitely exciting, and every time you actually listen to it, it's exciting. But it's only for that starting excitement. There is much, much more excitement when you actually drive the car. And that's what is there in Swami's message.
That's right. What happens is that when you have Swami stories and experiences which culminate in a message, somehow that message gets driven through harder, stronger, and in a more memorable fashion.
Absolutely.
And
that's why an Audi car starts with that amazing rumble.
And that is why we are going to start this afternoon satsang with some of the most beautiful experiences that happened on the sands of Chitravati. Well, in the physical realm, they might have happened on the sands of Chitravati, but these are divine, unforgettable incidents that will be etched forever in the sands of time, I'm sure, because they are so beautiful in the way they happened and also in the message that they conveyed.
Absolutely. And in fact, you know, any of the authors who have been with Swami in those early 1940s, 1950s, a good amount of their narrative will include these sessions of Chitravati. Because that was the time when there was no interview room, you know.
Correct. Course,
there was that Korika room, which even in Subhama's house, there was a mention about. But I think that was the time when Swami, as Swami would describe it, the phase of Leelas.
There was no mass interview room.
Right.
Like later on, we had the Purnachandra where all the delegates would assemble.
Or the Bhajan Hall.
Or the Bhajan Hall where all devotees from one certain region would assemble. There was no such a big place, and that is why Swami resorted to the sands of the Chitravati. I remember reading one very interesting episode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is Shri Lokanath Mudaliar.
Okay.
We will be hearing a lot about him because he was instrumental in the Gindi temple coming up, the first Shirdi Baba temple that we spoke about last time. So, Swami once had taken him also along. I mean, whoever is in Parthi during that time, they go along with Swami to Chitravati. So, on the sands of Chitravati, Swami asked him, how many times do you go to Tirupati? Tirupati, as you know, is another pilgrimage spot in India where Lord Venkateshwara, a form of Lord Vishnu, is worshipped, and it is supposed to be one of the largest temples in every sense in the world, the Tirupati Venkateshwara temple. And so Swami asked him, how many times do you go to Tirupati? Then Shri Mudaliar, he replied that, Swami, I go twice a month.
Mm-hmm.
Then Swami asked him, will you stop going there if I get Vishnu to come to you? So he was quite thrilled at this proposition. He said, yes, Swami, if my Lord Vishnu himself comes to me, why do I need to go to him? Then Swami just, you know, from the sands of Chitravati, he pulled out a statue, a beautiful statue of Lord Mahavishnu, and along with it also a statue of his consort, that is Lakshmi. He gave this Vishnu statue as promised to Lokanath Mudaliar.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, you know, the daughter of Sheshagiri Rao, as we discussed, was the first priest of the Prashanti Mandir. His daughter Sundaramma was, who also happened to be during that Chitravati riverbed session.
Mm-hmm.
Swami gave her the statue of Lakshmi.
Okay.
Now, this was, yes, one nice incident. But, you know, it didn't stop there. It going ahead, what happened was Swami said that let us have a Kalyanam,
mm-hmm.
a Vishnu and a Lakshmi Kalyanam.
Okay.
You know this tradition, right, of marriages between gods that is performed in India commonly.
Right.
It is often considered that the consort mm-hmm. is Prakriti or stands for creation. And the Lord, the male aspect of the Lord is considered to be Purushottama,
right.
The Lord. So, it is said that everything in the universe is the Lord and Prakriti, God and nature. And the goal, since nature has come from God, the goal of nature is to go back to God.
Right.
So, creation comes about when there is a separation between Purushottama and Prakriti, and then merger comes when Purusha and Prakriti become one,
mm-hmm.
when there's union of Purusha Prakriti. In order to teach this message that the ultimate goal of every human life is that merger with the Lord, because we are all part of the Prakriti, we have to become one with the Lord. In order to symbolize that, a marriage or a union of the consort and the Lord is performed, a wedding. And these weddings can be very elaborate.
Right.
They are done like any other wedding. You know, with all the ceremonies and festivities where the bride is brought, the groom is brought,
mm-hmm.
and there are the mantras that is chanted, all the festivities, everything. 2-3 days it goes on. So that people revel and enjoy, at the same time learn the significance that this is pointing us towards the ultimate goal in our life.
Okay.
And so Swami decided to, you know, conduct this marriage between Vishnu and Lakshmi.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as I said, they make all the detailed arrangements. They decided that Pata Mandiram,
mm-hmm.
which was Swami's mandir in those days, will be like the groom's house.
Okay.
And Karanam Subhama's home will be the bride's home.
Okay.
And all the people and all the family members and relatives of Shri Lokanath Mudaliar were considered like the groom's side.
Mm-hmm.
And Sundaramma, as I said, Sheshagiri Rao's daughter. Her family and everybody were considered like to be the bride's side.
Mm-hmm.
So in fact, and that they were all at Subhama's home preparing the bride. And it's also recorded that Swami said that we need a nice silk sari to drape the bride. It was a small idol of Lakshmi. And however hard they searched, at that time in Parthi, all they found was a small piece of cloth, silk cloth, which had a slight golden embroidery done as a border. That was the only thing they found. Swami said, okay, get that cloth. And as Mrs. Sundaramma's daughter held that piece of cloth in one hand, Swami held the other end and just pulled it. And like an elastic piece, it expanded. It expanded to become a mini sari which could be draped around the idol of Lakshmi.
Okay.
And Swami said, yes, this will be the bride sari for the marriage. So there was a lot of festivity and preparation going on. In fact, there was a procession of the bride from Subhama's home to the Pathamandiram, where the groom will be waiting. Now, during all this, what happened was another leela. You know, this is the way Swami began to involve everyone into what has now become large-scale programs in the mandir. So, Swami then saw that Sundaramma, who is supposed to be the lady who received the Lakshmi statue, she was not very interested in this. And she was not interested because she had a problem of her own. On the way to Puttaparthi, when she was coming, she had lost her Mangal Sutra.
Okay.
You know, the Mangal Sutra is supposed to be
precious for a married woman.
It's supposed to be symbolic of her marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And it is considered that if you lose the Mangal Sutra, it is almost like you're losing your husband. That is what they fear. So she had lost the Mangal Sutra and she was very worried about it. And that was what occupied all her thoughts. She did not want to think about, you know, this marriage between what she thought was these two idols. So when this was going on, in the marriage, Swami materialized a beautiful necklace for the groom, that is Vishnu.
Okay.
And he materialized the Mangal Sutra for the bride, Lakshmi. And there was a feast after that and everybody sang bhajans. They reveled in the stories of Lord Vishnu and Lakshmi. It was a beautiful satsang. At the end, in the night, Swami comes to Sundaramma and says, you know, I performed this whole program for your sake. So she just, you know, because Swami is saying like that, she just acknowledges and she is grateful and she says, okay Swami, fine, thank you. But in what way it's for my sake? Then Swami says, go see the Mangal Sutra I created for Lakshmi. You take it and you use it now. Okay, because, you know, once they are all in temples also, they are called Utsava Murtis. They are brought out only for that celebration. After that, everything is removed and the statues go back into the locker or into wherever. So here also, Swami said, yeah, now when they are going to remove everything, you can take that.
But she had not told Swami that she has actually lost her.
She has not told. She is wanting to tell, okay. But
Swami
just
is in this festive mood.
Exactly. Just as she is preoccupied with her Mangal Sutra, Swami is so preoccupied with this wedding.
Okay.
And then she goes to the statue of Lakshmi and she sees that it is the exact same Mangal Sutra. Mm-hmm. Either it is the Mangal Sutra that she lost or it's a replica carbon copy down to the last white gem and stone that is there in that. Everything perfect. She's so thrilled. And this was another leela that Swami did. So, you know, while Swami thrilled them with the miracles, at the same time he would teach them the inner meaning of all these rituals that are conducted, show the spiritual behind the ritual. And well, when speaking about Chitravati, this is one incident that came in my mind.
I mean, talking about giving that joy to a woman, as you said, in Indian tradition, for a married woman, that Mangal Sutra is so important. There's another incident, I think we've narrated it before, but you can't talk of Chitravati and miss out some instance like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's when one Swami used to go, when Swami used to take this group of his devotees and go there, there was this one particular lady whose hut used to be on the path to the Chitravati river bed. And every time Swami would go by, she would just come out and offer Pada Puja to Swami and, you know,
worshipping the feet.
Yeah, worship the feet and wash his feet. And she would go back. And she was a widowed woman. And, you know, in Indian society, in those days, there's this stigma that widows would not join such processions, ritualistic processions and all. And she used to feel
because
that
it used to be considered inauspicious.
Right. And she was seeing that Swami was a Swamiji, you know, in that time, was going with his devotees. So she wouldn't join the group. But she would always come out and offer worship to Swami's feet. But one particular day, Swami said, why don't you also join us? So she was very happy and so she joined the party. So there Swami on the banks of River Chitravati, Swami looked at her and asked, what do you want? Okay, and very innocently this lady said, Swami, I want a picture of my dead husband.
Oh.
Okay, and you can imagine this was in 1940s and her husband had died some 20 years before.
Okay.
So it was, I think, much
no
before
Swami. No way that he would have known about the existence of a camera also.
And much before Swami was even born. Okay. So Swami is asking her, was he ever photographed?
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. Okay. And she said, I don't think so, Swami.
And how does she expect to get a picture?
I don't know. Maybe she had that much faith in Swami that, you know, Swami could do anything. What was the this one? But she was asking for a photograph of a dead husband who was probably never even photographed.
Mm-hmm.
And who lived in a time when cameras never came to Puttaparthi.
Swami had also not come to Puttaparthi.
And Swami was also not born. And as is usual way, as we would see in the other episodes also, Swami started making a heap of sand.
Mm-hmm.
And stealthily putting his hand into that heap of sand, Swami pulled out a photograph of her dead husband.
Wow.
And I think we narrated this in the time when we spoke about Swami's beyond
being
time.
Beyond time and space. I also remember, you know, these sands have transmuted into so many things. There is the episode where, this is much later, not in 1946, what we are speaking about. But, well, when we speak about Chitravati, we speak about Chitravati. Swami was taking a stroll on the banks of Chitravati with Dr. Bhagavantam.
Right.
And then Swami picked up a...
That was the first visit of Bhagavantam. Actually, he was a scientist who was very skeptical and he comes. So that was his first encounter with Swami's miraculous ways.
And you know, it is recorded in Sai Baba Man of Miracles by Howard Murfitt. You know, Swami picked up two things happened. One is where Swami picks up a handful of sand, tells Dr. Bhagavantam to hold out his hand and pours the hand into his sand. I mean, sand into his hand.
Right.
And the sand transmutes into a copy of the Bhagavad Gita.
Right.
And then there's another incident where Swami picked up a rock. Okay. And asked Bhagavantam, what is this? He says, it's a rock. Swami says, no, go deeper. What is there in it? He says, Swami, it's atoms. Swami says, no, go more deeper. What is there in it? Swami, electrons, photons. Electrons, protons. Go deeper. He goes to the level of quarks. I mean, I don't know if it was... Then Swami says, Bhagavantam, you're not getting the point. And then just Swami taps the rock and it has transmuted into a sugar candy which is in the shape of Lord Krishna. Swami breaks off the foot pedestal and gives it to him to eat. And then says, Bhagavantam, see, this is where science is failing. Beyond all your atoms and protons and electrons, if you go deep inside, it is God and sweetness that exists in everything. Such beautiful lessons through such wonderful leelas.
Really, just indeed. You know, another incident which I came by, I had actually read this long time back, but I was excited to read that it was even a personal account. Somebody had written about it in Sanatan Sarthi, 1975.
Mm.
You know, there was this one Mr. Lakshmaya.
Okay.
He was along with a group of people who came. Again, I think that group of skeptic people were ever present throughout Swami's life, who came and who didn't believe in those miracles, who wanted to come and have a close look. You know, it was one band of youngsters like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they had decided that, you know, they should ask for something from Swami which is absolutely impossible to materialize.
Okay.
That was the idea. So they came and, you know, Swami gave in and Swami said, come, we'll go. And playful that Swami was, Swami takes them to that part of Chitravati sands where they actually cremate and bury bodies.
Okay.
So Swami goes there and Swami says, let's sit anywhere you want.
Mm-hmm.
So they all sit down. And then Swami asks them, what do you want? So they say, Swami, we are all hungry. We want something to eat. So Swami asks them, okay, what do you want? You want laddu, bundi, masala dosa? And Swami gives them a huge list.
A menu.
Okay, they ask, what do you want? So these guys are, I think, already made up their mind. So they said, Swami, we want mangoes to eat.
Something that is not on the menu.
Right. Because that was absolutely out of season. And, you know, I don't think mangoes were actually reaching Parthi also then.
No, even today in places that, like even in Bangalore, for example, Bangalore is a major metropolitan city in India.
Right.
Even there, if you go to the hotels and ask for something made from natural mango, when it's not mango season, they tell that it's not. Unless you're in some real good city which is importing mangoes and preserving it, you don't get mangoes out of season anywhere, even in big cities.
Right. So... you know, that was the plan. So they said, let's ask for mangoes, a fruit which is out of season, and let's see if Swami can give us that. So, and Swami, that's the beauty of Swami. The miracles are there, the exciting things are there, but always he will try to you know, inject that little bit of message. Mm. Swami said, yeah, God's grace will give you anything, but you'll have to put your effort. Mm. Swami quoted that line from the song, Yatna Prayatnamul Manumad Dharmamu.
Jaya Pajayamalu Daivadinam.
So Swami said that, and Swami said, you have to put your own effort. So Swami said, you dig. You know, see, Swami is also putting in the message and also saying that you yourself dig and you can bring it out.
Okay.
You know, so removing that iota of doubt, if there was any.
If Swami had hidden it before, yeah, or something.
So Swami said, okay, you go around and dig anywhere you want. You'll find it.
Hmm.
Okay, so the man got up and he, like, you know, all the more trying to instigate Swami. Swami, where should I dig? Should I dig here? And he walked a few paces. Should I dig here?
Sarcastically.
Sarcastically. And Swami said, you sit anywhere and you dig. So he sat in one place and he starts to dig.
Hmm.
And so this person writes that this man dug up to 3 feet.
3 feet? Oh my God.
I think that's quite deep. And there's nothing he finds.
You said it was a graveyard, right?
It's a graveyard.
Hope he didn't unearth some bones there.
Yeah, that's coming to that. He digs about 3 feet and he says, Swami, it's not there. There's nothing here.
Mm-hmm.
Swami says, don't give up. You keep digging. You'll find it. And Swami says, you chant the name of the Lord which you like and you dig. Okay, so he chants Swami's name and he, you know, he goes on digging. And finally, he touches something which is cold and kind of little soft.
Hmm.
So he immediately squeals, because as you said, it's the graveyard, and you know, you might as well be touching some corpse which has been buried recently. And he squeals and, you know, he's shouting and he says, so there's something cold there. And you know, this person writes that Swami is actually rolling on the sand and laughing at this man's plight.
Hmm.
You know, he says that, you know, Swami is also about 16-17 years old, and Swami is also having fun with what's happening here. So Swami sends all the other youngsters. He says, you go and have a look there. So they say, the moment they go and see, go near that pit, they can get that strong fragrance of Alfonso Mango.
Mm.
Okay, very strong, that...
the best of the kind.
Right, that smell of sweet mangoes.
Mm.
So they all dig in and, you know, they bring out this huge mango. They get out from there, as though it's been kept in a fridge. It's cold and, you know, huge. So they give it to Swami and they say that, Swami, we are so
only
many...
Only one mango?
Here. Yeah, only one mango. They say, okay, we are so many of us here, about six of us here, and you give us just one mango, what do you expect us to do with one mango? Swami says, I'll give you. And takes that mango, and Swami materializes a knife and starts cutting that mango and giving it to these people. Okay, and you know how Swami cuts it? Swami cuts one full half, okay, and gives it to one person, turns the mango, cuts the other half, and gives it to the other person. Again turns the mango. The mango is full, and cuts half and gives it to one person.
I thought two halves make a full.
And these are like so many halves, and still it doesn't make the full. Because every time Swami is turning it, Swami is able to cut a half and give it to them. And Swami is going on giving and giving and giving, and these people are not able to take what Swami is giving. After some time they say, Swami, we've had our fill.
You
know, we cannot eat anymore. Swami said, no, you asked for it, you better eat it. And to add to that, Swami is saying, if you don't eat it, I'm going to call the spirits. You know where we are sitting, right? And, you know, that is one beautiful experience which comes from those Chitravati days.
Well, another Chitravati related experience is, you know, once when Swami, we spoke about how Swami would also join the women in making garlands, and you narrated that beautiful episode of the Tulsi garland. So it was one such occasion where all Swami was sitting with all the ladies and making garlands.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, you know, Swami suddenly told all the ladies that, come, let's go, Ganga is coming.
Okay.
Now Ganga is the river Ganges. It's considered as a holy mother who wipes out all your sins. And that is why every Hindu believes that at least once in his life or her life, he or she must have a dip in this holy river.
Right.
So when Swami said Ganga is coming, they thought, what is it? No, Ganga flows in the north of India. And right now, you know, that is a river that has caused quite some havoc. Not Ganga also, actually the tributaries of Ganga, that is Bhagirathi, Mandakini, Alaknanda, these are the ones that have created havoc in Uttarakhand. I mean, in the flood. I mean, such a huge river it is. Imagine all of them joining and forming the mighty Ganges. And it flows into the Bay of Bengal, at least 1,500 to 2,000 kilometers away from Puttaparthi. And now here is Swami saying that Ganga is coming. So they all thought, what happened to Swami? Swami says, no, come, drop whatever you're doing and follow me. And Swami walks out of the old mandir. They all walk out. And Swami walks up till the Chitravati river. And as they stand there, they see that there is some water in the river and nothing else. Swami stretches out his hands, both his hands to his sides, and tells all the women, "Do not cross my hands, stay behind this." And then he says, now she's coming, now she's coming. All of a sudden they hear a deep rumble. And right in front of their eyes, huge waves of water gushing towards them. They're almost scared. But then Swami tells them, "Don't get scared, she's coming to meet me." And at the same time he cautions them, "Don't cross my hands." So they just stand there witnessing the Ganga, which comes roaring and in all fury, becomes a gentle calm stream as it nears Swami and just comes enough to touch his feet.
Mm-hmm.
And then Swami says, "Oh Ganga, you have come, I bless you, I bless you." And then Swami asks the ladies to pass on a few coconuts, breaks the coconuts into the river, and then he takes kumkum, he takes haldi, that is turmeric, he puts flowers, he materializes flowers and puts into the Ganga, and then tells, "Ganga, now I have blessed you, you can go." And then in one late surge, the waters come around Swami's feet, and then they recede, and within moments, the whole thing is gone, the ground is bare and dry. And everybody is simply stunned. And when they look at Swami's feet, around Swami's feet is a beautiful garland of special large flowers. Flowers such as which are not found in South India. They are found only in the Himalayan ranges. That is from where Ganga originates. And so Swami takes up the garland and he gives one of these big flowers to each of those ladies to keep as Ganga's prasad. And all the ladies walk back, and when they walk back, nobody is speaking because they are all simply stunned and struck dumb by what they had just witnessed. The miracle where Ganga herself took a 1,500 kilometer detour to come and offer her salutations at Swami's lotus feet.
You know how incredible, remarkable this incident is, and to know that people who have actually witnessed this firsthand are still around us and they are there to narrate this incident, you know, it's not in fairy tale books. And even as you were narrating this incident, the images which come to my mind are part of the documentary, which, you know, that great documentary we spoke about.
Exactly. You know, this incident also is well captured in that documentary called The Advent.
Right.
In which we can see the person who experienced this, she is narrating this incident. And you can actually see the incident panning out on her face itself. Her expressions speak a lot. You need not understand Telugu to understand what she is telling, because her expressions speak what happened. So yes, if we can state it here, it is definitely a must-watch video, The Advent. In fact, for Guru Purnima in the Mandir also, a short video that was shown is a part of that DVD itself called The Advent.
And I think it's a perfect time to even take a break and play this beautiful song which we have, which I think is quite apt after this incident which you narrated, Arvind.
Oh, the Gangamma Tallini.
Right.
Yes, dear listeners, this song was composed when, you know, this song was sung in Swami's presence on quite a few occasions, especially when Bhagwan started the water projects. You know, the song says that, "Oh Lord Sai, you have brought Mother Ganga to our doorstep," because that was how the relieved people felt when their parched throats and parched homes got the touch of Sai Ganga water, be it in Anantapur, be it in Medak and Mahbub Nagar districts, be it in the city of Chennai, that was, or the East and West Godavari districts. They really felt that Mother Ganges had come home through Sati Sai drinking water supply project. And therefore this song, but as you said, it's also apt because Swami did literally bring Ganga Matalli, Mother Ganga, to the doorstep.
Oh, తల్లి నీ మా ఇంటి దాకా రప్పించినావయ్యా, గంగమ్మ తల్లి నీ మా ఇంటి దాకా రప్పించినావయ్యా, మమ్ము కరుణించినావయ్యా, మమ్ము కరుణించినావయ్యా. జన్మ జన్మాల పుణ్యాల పండలే, జన్మ జన్మాల పుణ్యాల పండలే, దర్శించుకున్నామయ్యా మేము దర్శించుకున్నామయ్యా, తరించినామయ్యా మేము తరించినామయ్యా. గగనాన విహరించు గంగమ్మ తల్లిని భూమిపైకి తెచ్చేనంట, ఏ తపము చేశాము ఏ నోము నోచాము మా పూజ ఫలించెను, గంగమ్మనే మా గణపవరకు శాసించినావయ్యా, దాహాటి తీర్చావయ్యా. గంగమ్మ తల్లిని మా ఇంటి దాకా రప్పించినావయ్యా.
That was a beautiful song. I mean, it brought back such wonderful memories, Prem. I remember this was even sung in Swami's presence during a program entitled Prema Vahini, The Flow of Divine Love. So beautiful, reliving those memories and those incidents. You know, one Swami had told another student that when the student got overwhelmed with the amount of blessings and love that he had received from Swami, he said, Swami, wow, I just don't know how to repay for all this, so much that you have done. Swami said, you don't think about repaying, but all these memories, treasure them and cherish them. Now they are being given to you. There will be a time when they won't be given. At that time, relive these and relive this divine joy that you are getting, because this is the highest kind of joy. So I think that is a strong message for all of us. All these memories that we have, all the stories, all the experiences, we should relive them and keep cherishing them again and again, so that Swami, we can feel Swami's presence with us forever. You know, it is two things. One is whether Swami is with us, and the second thing is whether we can feel that He is with us. Swami says God is like the radio waves, always in the atmosphere, every time present. It is the radio that has to tune in. If you are not able to tune in, you are not able to hear anything. But the minute you tune in, you are able to hear it and feel it. In the same way too, Swami's love and Swami's presence in our lives is always there. We just have to tune into Him. And tuning into Him is what we call as sadhana or mananam or dhyanam or bhajans or seva. All these are methods to tune into our beautiful, omnipresent Swami.
Right, you know, it's so beautiful that we are able to recollect, and as I said, some of these people who have actually witnessed this are still around and we're able to hear it from them. And maybe if time permits, we'll play a clip of one person who's also been, you know, seen Swami for so many years. Before we come to that, another incident which comes to my mind is what I read about Sakama. We've spoken so much about her.
Dodamane Sakama.
Right.
Hmm.
And also referred to as Coffee Pudi Sakama.
Yeah.
You know, she always had this doubt. You spoke of Swami materializing the Bhagavad Gita.
Hmm.
She always had this doubt. Whenever she would read the Bhagavad Gita, she would wonder, 700 shlokas of Bhagavad Gita, is it practical that Krishna stood in the middle of the battlefield and rendered all of them?
It would have taken a minimum at least 2 hours to 3 hours.
Even if you say a minute per shloka,
Oh yeah, it goes huge.
Yes,
oh my God, it takes...
It's about 10 hours.
10 hours.
So even if, you know, none of them paused in between and they just kept on rattling one after the other, it would take 10 hours. So she was wondering, how is it practically possible that such a huge Bhagavad Gita was rendered in that short time and in that tense scenario of, you know, between the two battle ready contingents?
Mm.
So she always had this doubt. So once when Swami had taken this group to Chitavati, she asked Swami, Swami, what exactly happened? Is it that this whole thing was recited, or is it, you know, there's also that interpretation. They say that Krishna actually gave a very concise form of Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. And
okay.
Vyasa felt that the humanity which would follow
will need an elaboration.
Will need some kind of commentary inbuilt, and that's why the 700 verses. So she asked Swami that, is it true, you know, what is the actual truth? So Swami did not answer anything. Swami started again, you know, building that mound of sand.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was apparent Swami was materializing something. So Swami materialized a small statue of that scene of Gita Upadesham, where Krishna is sitting on the chariot and Arjuna is also there, and Krishna is explaining Gita to Arjuna. So a gold chariot with all the horses and, you know, the ordinate chariot and these two warriors.
Quite a detailed statue.
Yeah, with all details. And very exquisite looking. And Swami asked the people around, in your opinion, how much time would it take to make a chariot like this? Sorry, how much time it would take to make a chariot like this? So they all looked at it and said, you know, easily a month. And with three or four people working on it.
Okay.
Right, and a goldsmith with real expertise. Then Swami asked, how much time did it take for me to make it? So then they said, Swami, hardly a couple of minutes. Swami said, see, what takes at least a month with four people working on it to make, I got it done in 1 minute. That is the control divinity has over time. So is it any wonder that Krishna actually stopped time for everybody around and, you know, gave this whole lengthy discourse to Krishna, to Arjuna?
Wow, that's a very interesting thing. So people are frozen in time. And this concept, in many of the movies also we see, you know, where a person comes and freezes time. And if men can comprehend it, why not God execute it?
Right.
Wow. That's another lovely miracle from this, on the sands of Chitravati. Well, we can go on and on, Prem, but maybe one more lovely incident that happened, Leela that happened on the sands of Chitravati. This was during another session. This is also recorded in the DVD called The Advent. And Swami had taken this group of people, the group of devotees, to the sands of Chitravati, and he said, today I will give you darshan of the sun and the moon together. So they were thinking, how sun and moon together? It was an evening, a lovely pleasant evening. And suddenly they see that Swami is no longer in their midst. Till now he was there, and he has disappeared. Literally disappeared, because where can he go? It's an open area, open place. Suddenly they hear Swami shouting out to them, look at me, I'm here. And they look and see that Swami is on top of a hillock that's just next to Chitravati. And wow, they're amazed at how he got there. Swami says, now see, this is darshan of the moon. And suddenly the whole place, you know, went dark, went blue, became cool, and in the sky they saw a huge moon, as if you're seeing it from half the distance between earth and moon. You know, it was that big in size. It became so cold that everybody started shivering, their teeth began to clatter, and they said, Swami, oh God, it's very cold. And the next moment Swami said, now have the darshan of the sun. Instantly the skies brightened up, turned into hues of orange and red, became very bright, and double the size of that moon. It was a huge burning ball of fire, and the sun. Now the temperature soared so much that everybody who had their teeth chattering in the chill were now sweating profusely and telling, Swami, stop it, we can't bear it any longer. Again they hear Swami saying, now watch out for the Trinetra Darshan. You know, in Hindu mythology, it is said that Lord Shiva has the third eye on his forehead.
Right.
And it is said that when he opens the third eye, the whole universe is just burnt into ashes. That is the way the whole universe is supposed to get destroyed. You know, that is the power of the third eye. And so, then as they look up to see what is this third eye going to be about, Trinetra Darshan, they see that the whole sky is covered with, you know, Swami's face. Everywhere they see, it's just one huge face. And in Swami's face, on his forehead, a gap, a crack came, which seared and opened up. And from there, you know, it was like some intergalactic fireworks going on. You know, there was fire emanating, and it was a very, very fearsome and scary scene. You know, in that DVD, it is so beautifully depicted, because as this scene comes alive, we can hear the chants of that Namaste Astu Bhagavan Vishveshwaraya Mahadevaya, that, you know, in praise of Lord Shiva. It's so amazing. And the person who was witnessing it says that as they had this Trinetra Darshan, they all collapsed. Some out of fear, some out of shock, some out of awe, for different reasons, but they all collapsed. And some of them screamed, Swami, enough, stop it! The next moment, everything became tranquil and calm. It was the same beautiful evening, and Swami was back in their midst. Swami smiled, he waved his hand and created Vibhuti. And he gave that Vibhuti to all those who had fallen unconscious. And all of them came back into their senses immediately as they received Swami's Vibhuti. Swami said, that is enough for today. Come, let's go back. So, you know, these were the kind of leelas, these were the kind of miracles that they got to witness. It also gave them an idea of who Swami is. You know, people may speak of hypnotism, but there is, first of all, very few instances of mass hypnotism, and hypnotism relies on sound or eye contact, and here there was nothing, and they saw everything. Such things are not recorded even in hypnotic history. I mean, this is sheer miracle, sheer power of the Lord. And Swami, you know, says that this is not the majesty of the Lord. This is just His calling card. This is just His visiting card. Such is the grandeur and glory of the Lord that we have been lucky to know about. Really, really, doesn't it make us feel so full of gratitude for Him having called us to Him?
Definitely, you know. The beauty of this whole narration actually was in the way she narrated also. Because, you know, for one thing, it's so incredible when you listen to it. But as you said, it's so graphic, and you could, you know, when Mrs. Vijayamma narrates this, you can see it in her eyes when she's actually narrating it. She says how after that Swami asks them to sing bhajans. And you know, when Swami asked them to sing bhajans, they're so out of coherence, they're not even able to sing bhajans. They're like walking helter-skelter, and Swami's telling them, you know, this is why I don't show you all these things. Another interesting episode she narrated, you know, not exactly related to Chitravati, but related to that time frame, was one of the Dashara processions she narrates. You know, she says how they make a beautiful palanquin for Swami, and it's made completely with flowers, and Swami is himself so tender, and when he sits on it, they're supposed to carry this palanquin and, you know, take him around the village. But she says that after Swami sat on that palanquin, that scene looked so beautiful that nobody was actually prepared to carry it and look away from Swami and walk. That's how you can do a procession with a palanquin, right?
Correct. You have to look away from her.
So, like, nobody was ready to look away from Swami, because Swami is looking so beautiful. So she said they did the entire procession walking backwards looking at Swami and singing bhajans.
And there are records that during Dasara such processions, you know, kumkum would manifest itself on Swami's brow.
And Swami would just, you know, do an act as though he's throwing something, and there would be chocolates, there would be toffees, candies, and all kinds of things.
And even gold pendants.
Pendants and all kinds of objects. Which she was telling, you know, I mean, you can imagine, it's first of all the village, there are no street lights, there were no roads, and they're walking like that, and Swami would be sitting on the palanquin, and Swami would say, you know, take left, take left. There's a pit there, you know, go this way, go that way. And she said, on one occasion, they started this procession about 8:39 in the night. And they went on till 2 in the early hours of the morning. Okay? And she said, not once we actually were going past the same place we went by.
Oh.
Okay? And some of them were so wonderstruck, because they said, you can actually walk through the entire village and wherever there is road in about 45 minutes.
Okay.
And they were wondering, where did they go actually?
Hmm.
And the next morning they all went around and to see, you know, where did they actually go? But they could never figure out. But the whole procession took from 8 to 2 in the morning, and they had not actually walked by the same route even once.
Wow.
And you know, some of these things are really amazing and
incredible. Dear listeners, these are all incidents mostly that happened during, you know, 1940s, and we are in our narrative, we are in 1946. And Prem, 1946 was the year when the first time Dasara was held at Prashanthi Nilayam. At that time at Puttaparthi, at the Pathamandiram.
Okay.
Previous to that, Swami had seen how Dasara is being held in Mysore. So this was the first time that Dasara was held at Puttaparthi. In fact, 1946 is also the year of another first. An event that has today become an annual event in the calendar of every Satya Sai Samiti, Satya Sai organization all around the world. And that is the global Akhanda Bhajan.
Right.
So it was in 1946 that this Akhanda Bhajan was started.
Right. And I think we should listen to this whole description from Mrs. Geeta Mohan Ram. Because of course we can narrate it here, but the way she narrates it is so beautiful.
It's inimitable, yes, exactly.
Yeah,
so dear listeners, here is a narrative of how this global Akhanda Bhajan came to be and how humble were its roots and how, most importantly, how those roots were nourished by Swami with his time and energy and love.
Really? And we're going to play that clip for you where Geeta Mohan Ram talks about how this Akhanda Bhajan actually began.
When they went there and they saw him and they believed him, they said, we want to keep the strength of having seen such a wonderful being in our lives when we go back to Bangalore from Puttaparthi. So when they first started going to Puttaparthi and they started to sing those long songs in front of Swami, and Swami used to join in with them, they came back to Bangalore and they said, you know, we want to bring this atmosphere of Prashanthi Nilayam. There was no Prashanthi Nilayam even at that time. The atmosphere of Swami back with us to Bangalore. So what shall we do? So they said, why not start Thursday bhajans? At least one day in a week, let us start singing these songs in our own homes. So these 8 families, my aunts and uncles who first went to Swami, decided to have a Thursday bhajan by rotation. Every Thursday, one family would have a bhajan. And in those days, India was still not an independent India. So there was curfew, there was war going on, there were no lights, people were not allowed to go on the streets because of the war that was going on. But they still said, Sai Ram will take care of us and we will go. So they started, this was in the year 1943, they started to do their Thursday bhajans. Every other family member in their own families thought they were crazy. They didn't believe in Swami. They said, what are you all doing? On the faith of some 16-year-old boy in Puttaparthi, like I said yesterday, a boy who comes from a family that eats non-vegetarian food, who's not a Brahmin boy, who's never gone to school, you are going to do what he asks you to do? But that faith had grown a little bit stronger in their hearts, and they said, no, we have to do this. It doesn't matter if these family members discard us, but we have to stick together, these 8 families. So they started to do their bhajans. And for 1 year, they did these bhajans every Thursday, come what may. Rain, sunshine, started at 7 o'clock in the evening, finished at 9 o'clock, and walked home. Quite far distances. After 1 year was over, they decided that we have successfully, for 1 year, completed a cycle of bhajans. Let us do a 24-hour bhajan. That is how the idea of the Akhanda Bhajan that we do, the 24-hour bhajan, started. They said, for 24 hours, let us do nothing but Namasmarana, because that faith in us needs a fence. Because the family members have discarded us, our friends have discarded us, the only person we have is this little Sai. So we have to put a fence. So let's do a 24-hour bhajan. So they wanted Swami's permission, and of course in those days these were the only 8 families that were there that would visit Swami in Puttaparthi, in the little old mandir. So they wrote a letter to my grandfather who was living there, saying, we are planning to do a 24-hour bhajan, and we would like to have Swami's permission to do the bhajan. And we will do it in one of our houses. And they had no plans. And they were very traditional Orthodox people. So they said, you know, we will start on Thursday morning at 10 o'clock. And they would completely fast till the following morning, Friday morning, 10 o'clock. Not like our Akhand bhajans, is it? We usually have a bhojan akhand bhajan. Not here in the UK, in Washington DC. So they would fast the whole 24 hours. Their only food was the namasmarana. Their only food was the bhajan. They would have a little bit of coffee or hot milk or something to keep their throats going. Remember, there were only 3 or 4 or 5 singers. So they had to sing all through the day. And then in the morning, at 10 o'clock, when the bhajan ended, they would do a little abhishek for Swami. And they would do the aarti and end. And at that time, they would break the fast with a little bit of prasad, some rice or whatever they were going. This was the plan. So they wrote this letter to Swami, to my grandfather actually, saying that this is what we're planning to do. Please take Swami's permission, if it is possible for, is it okay for us to do this? And they waited eagerly, and they got a letter, this time from Swami, saying it's a wonderful idea, this 24-hour Akhanda Bhajan. In fact, he named it Akhanda Bhajan. And it's a wonderful idea, and I will be there. Which is the date? This is usually we used to do it in the month of February. So these guys were a little taken aback, the relatives. What do you mean? What does he mean? He's coming. We didn't invite him. We're just going to keep the picture there. If he comes, it's a problem. We'll have to look after him. He's going to bring a few people from Puttaparthi. We'll have to look after them. And they were all middle-class people, staying in little homes, small houses. They couldn't believe that they would have to look after Swami in their small house, could not give him all the facilities that they would love to give him. They didn't have a car to bring him from Puttaparthi to Bangalore. So they wrote back, saying, no, no, we didn't invite Swami. We just want permission to do the Akhand Bhajan in our own way, the way we want to do it. That's all. Wonderful Swami. They wrote the letter and they're still waiting for this permission. When they get a telegram, and the telegram says, Bail there in Amo. That means we have already left Puttaparthi. So they were in a quandary. So they had to come. Now what are they going to do? This whole business of doing it in somebody's house is gone. Because they have to look after Swami. He is going to stay in the house. It was a little house, small house. So if Swami is staying there, how are we going to do all this? We have to take care of him. So hurriedly, they start looking for a hall, a community hall, which would allow them to do this. So they pulled together a little bit money, and my father, who was just a new dentist at that time, you know, 21 or 22 years of age, hadn't even started practice, you know, just about started practice, you know, found a place a little bit in the outskirts of Bangalore, and then they had to find a place for Swami to stay. And, you know, they went and spoke to one of the people with the bigger houses amongst the relatives so that he could stay. And they said, what are we going to do? We were going to fast from Thursday morning to Friday morning, but you can't have Swami fasting all the time. So somebody has to be at home to cook for him and make sure that he's all right. And who's going to bring him from the house to the bhajan hall? You know, which is quite far away. It was about 10 kilometers or whatever. Nobody had a car. So while all this discussion is going, who should arrive in a horse cart but Swami and my grandfather? They've already arrived. They've come all the way from Puttaparthi in that fashion that I described to you yesterday. Crossed the river, got into a bullock cart, took the train, got into a horse cart and arrived at my father's house on Wednesday afternoon. We are here. Problem. He's a day early. Swami, we are still setting up the hall. Oh, is that true? Then I want to come and see this hall. So they all get into this horse tanga, as we call them in Bangalore. And they all go over to the hall. And there is a picture of Swami's. A little picture, a black and white picture of Swami's. And Swami says, oh, this picture is not nice. I don't look too good in this picture. Let's get a better one. So he materializes a bigger picture and says, let's put this one. So somebody hurriedly goes and puts a little cardboard frame around it. And then he gets into the whole process of setting up the stage. Look at this beautiful stage. Somebody has done a wonderful job. Creates such a beautiful atmosphere in this hall. So that's what they were trying to do. Create that atmosphere, and Swami is there busily putting the garland, busily helping them spread out the sheets, and it was his bhajan. The reason I am giving you this description is that Swami says, don't leave God behind in your altar when you go out to work. Take him along with you. Take me along with you. Whatever you're doing, make me a part of your life. You're setting up the altar, take me there. I enjoy it too with you. Because if there's love in your heart for me, I enjoy it. So that's what he was showing these people. Take me with you to set up that altar, even if it's my altar. I'll show you how you can concentrate on this picture. Because they were all just new aspirants in this path. They didn't know anything much. They were all housewives, not very much educated. Just knew that their duties were to look after their families, the ladies. The men were busy with their own work. So he busily did all this. And then they said, Swami, you have to go back to the house because that's where the food is. Swami said, what are you all going to do? We are fasting. He said, oh, is that true? That's good. It's good to discipline your body and your mind, at least for a short while, once in a while. And he goes back. And now, as soon as Swami leaves, you know, Swami says in every discourse, and all of you have heard, I'm sure, or at least read, intane, kantane, jantane, ventane, yappudu untano, I'm always behind you, besides you, with you, in you, in front of you, I'm always with you. And those are such beautiful words. We come out of the Prashanthi Nilayam discourse and say, Swami spoke so well. Of course he did. He's the Veda Mata. He created this world. Of course he spoke well. Is that why he said that? No, he really means it. And that's the idea that I want to bring with me this morning, that when we say that Swami is here, it's just not a figure of speech. He is really here. He hears every word I say. He knows every thought that you're thinking. And at one time or the other, you will come to know that he knows, as I have. So Swami went away to the house to rest because he had come from Puttaparthi, and these ladies who were organizing the whole thing, and I'm sure Shobhana will understand what I'm saying, were in a frenzy. They said, what are we going to do? We just have a little bit of rice for tomorrow morning's prasadam. There was a curfew. There was rationing of rice because the war was going on. The shops are all closed in the evening. How are we going to make sure that there is enough prasadam for everybody since Swami has come? Because guess what started to happen? While these guys were setting up the hall, suddenly, people from nowhere started to come and said, I believe there is a bhajan tomorrow. Is this the place? So they said, who are you? This is supposed to be a family gathering. Who told you? They said, oh, we've come all the way from Mysore because Swami came in our dream and told us to come. So not only does he show up, he starts telling people in their dreams to show up. So people from Mysore arrived, a gathering of 15 people. People from Madras arrived, a gathering of 25 people with young children. People from Hyderabad arrived, and suddenly this hall, which was supposed to have 15 and a half people, now had some 45 people, and these people had rice enough to make prasadam for 20 people. And they are in a mess. What are we going to do? Because we've collected the rice, there's no place to go. So this old lady, this old aunt of mine, who lived in Puttaparthi all her life. She was my mother's aunt actually. She knew Swami since he was a small boy of 5. She was almost motherly to him because Swami used to go to her house to eat vegetarian food. So she was like a mother to him. But at the same time, her name is also Savitrama, but not the same coffee powder Savitrama that you read in the Satyam Shivam Sundaram. In fact, the coffee powder lady came a little bit later. But she was there and she had access to Swami in a way. She knew that he was divine, but at the same time she was very motherly to him because she knew him since he was a little boy of 5. So she walks into the house where Swami is sitting on the chair and says, Swami, this is all your fault. We didn't ask you to come, you show up. Not only do you come, you go and tell people in their dreams to come. And now we have 75 people in this hall and we have no rice to make prasadam tomorrow morning for so many people. And the bhajan is going to start in a few hours. And people are just coming in with bags and baggages because it's 24-hour bhajan. So she said that we are going to be put to shame because in India, you know, the hospitality, if somebody comes, the guests, you look after them well. And you're going to put us to shame. And she said, remember, if you put us to shame, you are to be put to shame too. Because it is you that we believe in. So she said, she grabs, I mean, these are all stories that I have heard too. I wasn't there in 1944. This is the one time you always wish you were older. So she grabs his arm, the 17-year-old boy, and says, come on. And takes him to the bag of rice, 20 kilos or whatever it was that they had, and said, say Akshayam. Say that it will be an endless supply. Or we will be put to shame. So Swami materializes a few grains of rice, puts it into the bag and says, Akshayam, Akshayam, Akshayam. Don't worry, Sundaramma. This is my father's cousin. Don't worry. Everything will be fine. Why are you worried? The doubts, you know, sways you. They were new devotees too. They were just a year old devotees. So they were afraid. Their ego was saying, what are we going to do? People will say we didn't give them food. And the Swami has put us into trouble. Who is going to look after us? Then they said, but who else do we have but him? So let's ask him. And they brought him to the bag and he said, Akshay. So the bhajan went on. And Swami in the old days, and even when I was a young child, in our Akhand Bhajan, Swami would himself sing the bhajans. He would start the bhajans, sing in the middle of the bhajans. So the bhajan started. It went on for 24 hours. And Swami was there for the most part of it. And then the following morning, Swami materialized a little Shirdi Sai Baba, a statue. And to that statue, for the first time, he materialized that flow of vibhuti that you see in the videos now that Swami does during Dasara celebrations and birthday celebrations. But this was the first time he had a little pot, it's the same wooden pot that was brought, and he materialized all that vibhuti that became the abhishek for that Shirdi Sai Baba. That is why the Paramam Pavitram that you all repeat and you say so beautifully in English, the flow of vibhuti, the translation of it, was composed by my cousin on that day. When they saw the flow of vibhuti coming out of that pot. So the vibhuti abhishekam was over and of course now the prasad distribution started. The rice was prepared into a sweet dish and they started to distribute. And Swami said, are you all okay? Are you distributing the prasadam? Yes, Swami. So he said, okay, I will go back to the house. When all the ladies finish distributing the prasadam, you come back to the house. And he looks at my aunt, Sundaramma, and says, why were you worried about going to the market when the Kalpavruksha, the wish-fulfilling tree, is right in your house? You were planning to go to the market to buy. Don't worry about the prasadam. And he goes home. So the prasadam distribution started at 10:30 in the morning, and it was a wonderful prasadam because, you know, Swami had materialized that rice and put it in. So they started to distribute. The 75 people were fed. The surrounding village was fed, the neighboring village was fed, and the prasadam is still there. Now this is prasadam, remember they are traditional people, they will never throw it away, but their arms are aching from serving. And Swami is sitting in my father's house telling my father and my grandfather, those ladies will never complain again about food. Now, first they complained that there was not enough food. Now they are complaining that there is too much food because their arms are aching from distributing the prasad. Finally, the old lady, Savitrama, comes back and says, Swami, enough of your game now. Stop it. Stop the increasing of food because we are tired of serving. They had served 300 or 400 or 500 people in the neighboring villages and still there was food left.
So, dear listeners, now you understand why we chose to play that clip instead of narrating it ourselves.
Yes. And all the familiar names, Savitramma, Sundaramma, they too figured again in the description, in the narrative. And, dear listeners, you will agree that no way can we replicate what Mrs. Geeta Mohan Ram has heard from her family members who were part of this beautiful beginning of the Akhand Bhajan. So we'll take a short break and we'll be back to conclude this afternoon satsang. Welcome back, dear listeners. It's 1:43 p.m. in our studios right now and we are enjoying a beautiful satsang where we are reliving the glories and stories of our dear Swami when he was Bala Sai, the young Sai. You know, right now we heard the beautiful narrative of Mrs. Geeta Mohan Ram, and her uncle was Mr. R.S. Ramachandran. Mm-hmm. It was during this time only that another amazing miracle was performed, and in this Shri R.S. Ramachandran mm-hmm. was intimately involved.
Okay.
It so happened that he had a hernia problem. Shri R.S. Ramachandran, Mr. R.S. Ramachandran had this hernia problem, and when all the family members were discussing about this, Swami overheard them discussing about this.
Okay.
So he straight walked up to Ramachandran and held him by his hand and took him into a room, the small room that existed in the old mandir, the Path Mandir. And there was absolute silence. Nobody knew what was happening inside. After about half an hour or so, Swami walks out and he calls out to two people and tells them to get fetch water so that he can wash his hands. And when Swami is washing his hands, they see that his hands are completely bloodstained.
Mm-hmm.
They are shocked. And then Swami just smiles and says that, you know, an operation had to be done.
Okay.
They walk into the room, they see that this Ramchandran is lying prostrate on the ground. He seems to be in deep sleep. And next to him are blood-stained surgical implements, which Swami had materialized from thin air. All the scalpel, the knife, everything is there. Everything which Swami has materialized from thin air. And there's a bandage around his stomach, where, you know, this hernia operation has been performed. And Swami is telling them that, you know, don't worry, he did not have any pain. I anesthetized him with vibhuti. And in fact, you know, hours later when Mr. Ramchandran actually woke up, they even removed the bandage that was around his stomach. There was not even a scar there.
Mm-hmm.
And he had been completely healed and cured of his hernia problem. So, well, you know, Swami can do these things with a mere will, just a thought. That's enough. He just has to think, he just has to will it, and it is done. Yet Swami did it in this manner, I feel, just because we enjoy it this way. You know, if Swami had just said that your hernia is over, and even if Swami says your disease is cured, and it's cured, we may feel nice, but if some dramatic element is involved in this way, where Swami materializes surgical implements from thin air and there's blood on them, and Swami washes his hand and Swami says, I used vibhuti as anesthesia. Does he need to use vibhuti as anesthesia? I mean, he doesn't need anything. But yet, for our joy, that is why it's called a leela, a mahima, so that we enjoy it. That is why Swami does it in this manner. And this was another beautiful miracle that happened in the 1946.
Right, you know, that's what is told about the Bhagavatam also.
Mm.
It said that the Lord takes so many forms and, you know, goes and redeems so many devotees, so that becomes a volume of the Lord's leelas that devotees in the future years can recollect. You know, he could have done the same thing with this, you know, different kind of people, and could have give redemption to different people doing the same thing.
Mm.
But it is so that he could give us this volume called the Bhagavatam, what probably we could call the Sai Bhagavatam, which we can all recapitulate and, you know, revel in the joy.
If you remember, Prem, recently we had a listener write to us,
mm-hmm.
saying that, you know, we spoke about Swami exorcising spirits and ghosts. And she had written to us saying that modern medical science has, you know, disproved all this, and it is just a case of psychiatry and, you know, people turning insane. There's nothing like a spirit or a ghost. But well, Swami himself, you know, in those days, he had made a mention of these spirits, of these disembodied souls, who Swami had said that if somebody commits a suicide or death happens in an unnatural manner, then there are so many things that are left unfulfilled, but the soul doesn't have a body to fulfill it. Mm-hmm. And that is why some of these souls even possess people who are weak-minded. Swami himself had said that. There were some strange cases that happened in 1946 where, you know, Swami would say that these souls are, they had the only desire that they wanted to have darshan of the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And since they could not achieve it through their bodies, they were now, you know, possessing the bodies of some of the devotees. And that is why, you know, when some people came to Swami with the malady that they are possessed by spirits and ghosts, all that Swami would do sometimes is give them Pada Namaskar or give them a picture of Lord Narasimha. Because on one occasion Swami said that the spirit that has come was a devotee of Lord Narasimha, and is pining to have a darshan of the Lord Narasimha. And once that is done, you will be free from this malady. And so, you know, all of them, this is recorded even in by Mrs. Sai Leela in her book Lokanatha Sai, that there were many souls that were seeking Swami, and once they had darshan, they left their so-called victims and went away.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, Swami declared, he said, from now on, anybody who enters the Prashanthi Nilayam, this was a few years later when Prashanthi Nilayam came up, will be freed of all that they are being possessed of.
Okay.
And I think that statement has meaning in more than one dimension. It frees you from, you know, just entering this Prashanti Nilayam, the abode of supreme peace, frees you of so many ghosts and spirits that possess us. Ghosts of worldliness, materialism, desires. And definitely that promise that Swami gave is holding true even today. But this is one more small mention I thought that must be made.
In fact, you know, there's another very interesting episode which is narrated, I'm forgetting by whom, but it was narrated by a person who was there and, you know, this thing happened. You know, someone came to Swami and spoke about one particular place seemed to be having symptoms of being, you know, taken over by an evil spirit or something like that. A place which was, again, very close to Vijitavati Sands. So one day, Swami went there with his devotees and Swami had asked them to bring along a few ropes to make a swing, which, you know, we've spoken about this before. Swami would go to some of these small woods near the river bank and Swami would tie up those swings and, you know, spend some time there. Swami told them to bring along some ropes so that they can, you know, tie up those swings. So at one particular tree, Swami told them that, you know,
in order to solve this problem, Swami has to swing. Whoa.
Swami didn't exactly say that he's going to solve this problem. You know, Swami just said, let's go there. And Swami made them bring these things along. And Swami made them tie a string, I mean, I'm sorry, a swing to the tallest branch of that tree. And so somebody got on top and tied.
There are pictures of this, right? Swami swinging.
There are plenty of pictures. I don't know if it's of this incident.
Okay.
Okay, so Swami got onto that swing and Swami told these people that, start swinging me. Okay, so they started swinging and two or three of them. So Swami was kind of unsatisfied and dissatisfied. He said, swing harder, swing harder. I want to go higher. Okay, and they were scared to do this. But Swami insisted, no, no, you push harder. Then after a while, Swami said, no, you're not doing it well enough. You move aside, I'll do it myself. So Swami was swinging so high that these people were really scared that, you know, at any moment this rope might give way and Swami might be just catapulted away. At one point, they just heard this branch cracking.
Okay.
So this swinging was too much for the branch. And with a huge snap, the branch just broke. And they were all looking up in the sky to see where Swami was, you know. And just then, Swami came from behind. Then Swami said, where are you looking at? What are you looking for? He said, Swami, are you fine? So when they looked down, this person who was written about this incident says, that branch which fell was actually much bigger than the tree itself.
Oh.
And they were wondering, what is this? And Swami then said that, no, there was a spirit or whatever was possessing this tree. Now the time has come and I've removed it.
Well, that reminds me, maybe this may be the last incident for today's satsang. That reminds me of when the village of Karnata Nagipalli, which is just across the river Chitravati, suddenly it started facing, people there started having many kinds of illnesses. You know, people would get nausea, vomiting, fevers, chills, and even some people felt that children were growing into hunchback, teenagers and adults.
Okay.
When this was brought to Swami's notice, Swami told some of the people around to get spades to dig. And he took them to this village of Karnataka Nagipalli nearby and he told them to dig at a spot. And the people began to dig over there. You must have read about this, right?
Right.
What they found there were the peers, as they're called.
In fact, you know, if you read the account of Nagamani Purnaya, Mrs. Nagamani Purnaya, she was there when this happened and she says the crowbar with which they were digging was actually stuck to the person who was holding it.
Oh.
And almost it was like it was resisting this act of the, you know, being dug up. So she says, you know, very graphically describes, it gets stuck and then Swami touches the crowbar, then that person is able to dig. And after a certain point, they start smelling the, getting the fragrance of what you call, you know, sambrani, they call it.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what it's dhoop. Called
it's called dhoop in Hindi.
Right.
It's a kind of fragrant wood that is burnt and it lets out a...
Right.
It's like an incense only.
Incense, yeah. They get that fragrance and in fact it is very common even in mosques and all that. They have these people coming around giving that fragrance, smoke, right? So they start getting that smell. And that's when after they dig further, they find this, what you said.
Peers. You know, these peers are actually small brass objects that are held very holy by the Muslims. And it is said that if anybody, you know, steps over them or disregards them, then they will suffer, because it is an object of great power, strength, and nobody, since nobody was aware of this, this was what was happening. Swami said that take them out and give them due regard and respect.
And these you will actually, see all. She says that these were actually in the path which was serving as a shortcut.
Oh,
so
okay.
Most of the people in the village were taking that path.
Oh, so they were walking over it.
Walking over it. Right.
And Swami said that now these problems will stop. And indeed, from that day, in the village of Karnat Nagepalli, all these problems ceased. And these peers were then given their place of respect. And I think even to this day...
Right, actually what happened was Swami brought these peers and kept it in the old mandir.
In the Patha Mandiram, okay.
Patha Mandiram. And just a few weeks later was the Muharram festival. So for which they came to Swami and they requested Swami that, because these peers usually are taken in a procession. They are like, okay. I think it's a shape of a hand or something like that.
Shape of a hand, yeah. Oh, have you seen those peers?
I think so. I don't remember now, because I've seen that procession. As we said, even to this day, that procession happens during the festival of Muharram. So they came to Swami and they wanted to take this on a procession. They found that they could not take it out of old mandir at all.
Okay.
The person who was carrying it, he was not able to cross the gate of Patha Mandiram.
Okay.
So then again Swami came and it seems he materialized some vibhuti and gave it to that person, and they were able to take it. So they got the message that it was supposed to come back
to the old mandir.
To the old mandir.
And so it was like Swami was the custodian,
right,
and he would lend it out for the procession.
Right.
Till a time came when Swami said, now you can take care of it.
Even now that procession happens, they bring it to Prashanta Nilayam, they come near Ganesha and then they take it around.
Yes, that is a very, very, very rare sight, because we never see that happening. Though I had seen this procession, Prem, I never knew the story, and it's only now that I'm being enlightened about it, and this makes me very, very keen and eager. The next Muharram, I'll definitely be out there to photograph this procession and have a look at those holy objects that came out of the ground there. The time in our studios now, dear listeners, is 1:56, and it is, and Brother Chandu is already here for taking over the next segment with music, Love to Love. So I hope that you enjoyed this satsang as much as Prem and me have enjoyed. Dear listeners, we are attempting something very Herculean and big. We are trying to get information from various sources so that we can build up a kind of timeline of Swami's story. So there might be some times where we go ahead or behind in the timeline. There might be some lapses. There may be a few errors in the names that we say, a few errors in the dates, but we try to rectify it, and as far as our knowledge is concerned, whatever is being said here is right. So if at all we notice any errors, we'll definitely rectify during the next session. Your feedback is most welcome. Please do tell us if you're enjoying this format or would you like us to change. And as always, with this satsang, this fortnight of Satyam Shivam Sundaram comes to an end. The next fortnight will be on other topics, after which the fortnight following that will be the next part of the Satyam Shivam Sundaram.
So dear listeners, we offer this effort of ours at Bhagwan's lotus feet. And as I've been said, you can always write to us at listener@radiosai.org. Please do write to us and tell us what you feel about this program and all other programs. We're going to leave you with a song. And as the song fades out, you'll be joined by Brother Chandu with his program, Love to Love.
Krishna, Ganam, Seyagade.